Once forged in the fires of PR and journalism, Curtis Dewar and Corey Westbrook united to create C-Squared. Now, on our podcast, we interview musicians and other industry professionals to give you an inside look on how to take your music to the next level.
Hello, everyone. You are listening to the C-Squared podcast with Corey and Curtis. Today, we are here with writing extraordinaire Jordan. He has worked for a billion publications. He's got his own book coming out on Opeth. And well, in all, basically, if you throw a stone anywhere in the internet, you're going to hit his words somewhere. But he is joining us today to drop some knowledge bombs and talk about his new book. And before we get started, I do just want to say thank you for braving the podcast and joining us for our shenanigans today.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me. It's nice to get to kind of meet both of you in a more real life kind of vibe. And yeah, I'm always happy to talk about myself.
Maybe a few less saxophones than what we're used to. And for those who don't know, there is a like almost year long running inside joke involving saxophones between Jordan and I.
Ongoing, and we'll keep going.
Yeah, we're both equally fucking stubborn and just, we're not letting it go. We are not letting that one go.
Never.
And so outside of saxophones and that stuff, for those who may not be familiar with who you are and what you do, do you want to give just like a brief intro of who is Jordan?
Sure, yeah. So I've been doing this for about 15 years. And I would say like these days, cause you know, with freelancing, it always fluctuates. So these days I would say that, the features editor at a website called Pop Matters, been doing a lot of work for Loudwire, Metal Injection, Consequence of Sound, What Culture, Prog Magazine. I've also written for like Paste and, the Grammys and Kerrang. So yeah, I'm kind of trying to get my foot in every possible place I can just to make myself feel better about myself, I guess.
Just a few places. So yeah. Now, how did you actually get started as a rock/metal journalist? Because I guess you're kind of both, aren't you?
Yeah, and that's the interesting thing is, like, I'm known mostly for, I guess these days, metal especially. But I try to write about pretty much anything I'm interested in, so I do branch out. And the way it really got started was when I started college in 2005. I immediately started writing for the newspaper and I said, like, yeah, I want to write about music. This has been my biggest passion, you know, for a few years at this point. So yeah, I immediately kind of started writing reviews of albums that were not at all new and that nobody would want to read about, but I wanted to tell people about. So I wrote a review of Spock's Beard Snow. I wrote, one of the first things I ever wrote for them was a review of Ghost Reveries though, Opeth's eighth album. Whether it was relevant or not, whether anyone was going to read it, it's like, I need my outlet to kind of just wax poetic about this stuff. So that, you know, I got some reception from like my classmates and the student body for that. And then I distinctly remember Coheed and Cambria's No World for Tomorrow was coming out. And I said, all right, I want to like take this up to the next level. Let me find some places to pitch to and try to, you know, go up to the next step. And I found a site called, it was called Delusions of Adequacy. I think they changed it to Adequacy. And now I don't think they're around anymore. But I pitched them and I got to do my first kind of like professional review for them for that Coheed album. Mm-hmm. And then it just kind of went from there and I pitched a bunch of other places. I wound up at like Examiner. I wound up at Sea of Tranquility. And like, 10 years ago, I wound up at Pop Matters. And it's just kind of escalated from there.
Fair. Now, just as a follow-up before the next question then. So how did you kind of get into like the bigger ones, because you mentioned a few of the smaller places, but then how did you kind of graduate up into like the Kerrangs and the Progs and all the rest of that?
Persistence and being annoying and just like not giving up. Like specifically for Loudwire, it was basically 6 months of me kind of every so often checking in and saying like, hey, I'm still here. I know you said you're not ready for freelancers yet, but in case, you know, anything I can offer for the next month appeals. So it's kind of like the squeaky wheel idea.
Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, it was kind of just like, I'm still around. I'm not kind of going away unless you blanketly tell me to stop bothering you, then maybe I will. And one of the things like I kind of realized and have realized, especially over the last few years when I've really been doing this more professionally, is that It starts out by proving that you can write and like who you are and you know what you're doing. But then eventually it goes from that to what can I offer the place that they're interested in. So it's no longer about like, I know what I'm doing and I know people. It's more of, all right, this is what's coming out next month, or this is like something, maybe like a holiday for next month that you might want some content on. And it, yeah, it's kind of just like the constant checking in, persistence, shifting up your approach, I guess, and waiting for kind of the stars to align.
That's a good way of putting it.
The same method of, that's how I broke into it too, is just basically consistently pestering everybody. And then eventually I just started like randomly putting posts in Metal Injections, like in the back end, just like seeing if Rob would post it.
Yeah, I remember the first thing the response he gave to me way back in, oh God, what was it, like summer of 17 is when I started there. His immediate response to me was, holy shit, you can write. And I said, thanks.
Yeah, his response to me was, look at you sneaking in the back door of our writer's room.
Anywhere you can do it. Exactly. And I remember with Kerrang, which I just did a review for them after like 18 months. I'm kind of with them again, but I don't know. But for them, it was Kat was the editor, and I could almost sense from her responses to me that she wanted to have me do something, but it wasn't the right pitch. So I could almost feel her like, I want to give you this opportunity. I think you're good enough, and I, you know, I'd be happy to have you. But what you're proposing right now isn't exactly what we're looking for. We have to kind of wait for the right pitch to come out. And then it was something with Alcest. I did like an interview with them, and that was like the right thing, and that got my foot in the door there. Mm-hmm.
Interesting. It's Corey's question next. Never mind.
It is my question next. Thank you for not stealing it. And so how did you get into like going from the music journalism to going into full on books?
Accidentally. So this was, what was it, like 2018? I was looking to publish a chapbook of fiction and poetry, because that's what my background is. That's why my master's is in fiction, MFA in fiction. So I guess I know what I'm doing there. Probably not. So I was just like on Facebook and Twitter saying like, hey, how do I publish a book of fiction and poetry? Like I should probably, you know, put a fire under my ass and get this done. And somebody suggested the publisher of Sonic Bond, Stephen Lamb. And I messaged him and I said like, hey, you know, your name came up. Do you do this? And he said, no, I have nothing to do with creative writing. I publish these, you know, we're starting the series. I publish these books called On Track about bands. And I said, oh, well, we came from, and then I like looked into who he is, and we came from the same English magazine called Rock Society that's not around anymore. So I wasn't sure if he knew who I was from that angle or not, but I said, oh, well, you know, I write about progressive music. You know, that's my biggest thing. What do you need? And he said, right now we're looking for books on Jethro Tull or King Crimson. And I said, well, I know both of them. I like both of them, but Jethro Tull is definitely what I'm more interested in. So how about that one? So he said, all right, here's how it works. And you know, that got done. And then the next time he said, what's next? And I said, how about Dream Theater? And he said, all right, and now that that's done, he said, what's next? And I said, how about Opeth? So it was kind of just that way of me accidentally pitching him on fiction and poetry. And then him saying, no, I actually do music. And I said, oh, well, that's more of what I'm interested in. So let's go that route.
Before we get into the next question, I just kind of want to know, do you know anything about music? Like, do you have a musical background, or you
actually don't? Wow, Curtis.
Well, I mean, some people don't. Like, I mean, like, I'm just asking, like, do you?
That's a good question. I used to know a lot more. Like in college, I was in like, I got to the second level of like music theory. So I used to know how to like chart 4-part harmony and the rules of like parallel fifths and all that shit. I forgot a lot of it. But I know some like basic theory. I like know time signatures. I know key signatures. But I always try, even in the writing, like everything I write, which maybe I fail at, but I try not to get too academic with it. I try not to get too much into theory. Yeah. Just more so like describe things in a technical way, but that's more accessible to people.
Yeah. Well, I was gonna kind of ask you, how do you find that you're able to do that? Because I mean, like, I've always noticed that with your writing, whenever I'm reading it, it doesn't seem to go too, like, I can understand it and I don't have a musical background. So how do you kind of make it so that way it communicates to someone who doesn't understand, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
That's a good question. Yeah, it can be challenging, and it can be one of the most like anxiety inducing parts of this is like, how do I adequately express what I feel about this song in words? How do I like hit the nail on the head?
Yeah.
And I don't know. I try to use vivid language and try to kind of like almost, I don't know, like put a creative spin on it or an animated spin on it so that I'm not talking about the technical stuff, but you still get a feel for how the rhythm may change. Or, you know, I think maybe the most like technical thing I say is arpeggios.
Yeah.
And I'll even vary that with like finger picking or like they break up the chord.
Yeah.
And again, I think that's,
I call those twiddly bits.
Yeah, like how do you, I don't know, especially with some of the weird shit that these bands do. It's like, how do I describe that? And that's one of the like faults I maybe have is I tend to approach everything I write from an academic lens because I'm a teacher. So like everything I write, I outline in my head of like, here's the thesis, here's this paragraph. And the publisher sometimes said like, you're using words that nobody knows. I'm like, I'll tell you what, I don't know what the hell they mean either. I'm just tired of using the same word multiple times. So let me just throw out some weird stuff.
That's funny. Again, Corey. Sorry, Corey.
Oh, well, no, that actually just kind of like goes into a bit the next question of the Opeth book. What, I mean, you already talked about a bit on, you know, how you got there, but talk a bit more about like the writing process. What are some like really interesting things you learned along the way? And maybe what like your favorite part of the Opeth book is?
Oh yeah. Well, the process for like all the whole series for me, all three of them is kind of the same, which is just you approach every album like it's its own chapter. So you just do a lot of pre-planning of like research. So for every album, I started with Wikipedia. Mm-hmm. Not using Wikipedia itself, but like kind of just getting an overview of the background of it and reviews, looking at all the footnotes and the hyperlinks and researching that stuff and going to all these different like tabs on my browser and basically just kind of reading all that stuff. For all three books, I had another book to help me, which I guess is kind of maybe cheating, but maybe not. So for this one, there is a book called The Book of Opeth that's more of like an autobiography from Rocket 88. So that helped. And it was really just like outlining the essay that goes into every chapter. Like before you get into the songs, you start with this like multi-page essay of just the history of the band from the last album to this one. What was the recording process like? What was the ambition? What have the reviews been? What was the touring schedule like? And just sort of like outlining that, hoping I do a good job with it and compiling like all the quotes and, you know, as we all know, like writing features and essays and shit. And I guess what was really like, I don't know, maybe my favorite part is really just like digging into it and having a new appreciation for the older stuff. Cause I often find that I'm like in any kind of metal circle, whether it's like, you know, Metal Injection Chat or anything, I always find like I feel almost like an imposter or the outlier. Cause metal, I like metal a lot, but I need like more dynamics in it. Like I'm not into straight up death metal. I'm not into just like growling and all. I need like an acoustic break. I need a progressive break. So I think like, especially with the early albums of the first two, like getting to appreciate more of like the jazz influence and the bass work and hearing like how it's all put together and just how that leads to the more sophisticated stuff that they immediately had with, you know, My Arms Rehearsed and then Still Life, which may be their best album, I don't know. Just appreciating that. And my favorite part to write, I think, was the Pale Communion section, because I think that album's a masterpiece, and I will defend that to my dying day. Heritage, not so much. Heritage is just like training wheels for that. But Pale Communion, I think, is incredible. And I'm always very, like, I don't know if I would say antagonistic with people, but I just always try to, like, put people in their place who get too into this stuff and get too offended by it and say like, oh, Opeth died when they stopped doing death vocals. It's like, shut up. It's a band. It's an album. Get over it. So I think writing a defense of that and saying like, I think this album's great. Here's why it's great. And just kind of trying to like put all the passion I have for that stuff into it makes it a little more fun and a little bit less of like a technical chore.
Mm-hmm.
So I
answered all the questions, but
Well, hold. I have a quick question just about the book end of things, though, if you're willing to answer it. So, yeah. Like, so do you like do you actually make more by doing a book than versus doing your freelance writing, or is it kind of like,
It depends on the sales.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, like I get a certain percentage of the sales, basically. I don't get like a fixed rate. It's just how many were sold, what percentage of that comes to me. And then, you know, some, I guess how it works is if they estimate with pre-orders, that has an amount. And then if they wind up not selling as many, they kind of deduct that.
Yeah, yeah.
I did make a lot more from the Dream Theater one. And I'm hoping to make it at least that much with this one. And I've been, you know, obviously promoting the hell out of it. I still have to go into like Facebook groups and basically annoy people like, hey, I'm writing a book.
Yeah.
But overall, it depends. You make a considerable amount. I think if I get the amount of steady work I have now, like if you outline it to like a year, which the Opeth book took me a year because I was really lazy and anxious about it and all, getting in my own fucked up head.
Yeah.
I'd make more freelancing if I do it consistently for a year than I did with the Dream Theater book. But it really fluctuates. It varies.
Fair. Okay. Just curious in terms of effort, like which actually moved the needle, but fair. Cool.
Yeah. Like there's definitely more effort in, I think, in writing the book. Yeah. Some of the freelancing stuff is a lot like easier, like writing music reviews at this point, you know, takes me an hour. Like it just pours out of me and I'm pretty much done.
Yeah. But then you got to do a deep dive on when you're writing a book. So yeah, no, I understand. Yeah. Makes sense. So next thing we're going on to is pitching pet peeves. But before we do that, can you kind of, my understanding is your title at Pop Matters is you're the features editor. So can you kind of clarify what that means? Because probably a lot of people listening don't actually know what that means.
Yeah, well, like there's a lot of features that we do. My main thing is that I basically am in charge of a series called All Things Reconsider, which is like album anniversary retrospective. So I basically compile a list in Excel every month of the next month's stuff. And I say, hey, everybody, here's all the album anniversaries coming out. Who wants to write about them?
Mm-hmm.
People get back to me. They pitch me. We talk about it. So that's mainly what I focus on. And there's only like four editors in total, including me, and two of them are, you know, the co-owners, the co-runners of it, and then Evan, who does interviews. So I have a larger role if I want to take on other features and kind of talk to them more about other things we could be doing. Like they want me to, I think, to get more involved with the TV too. But in terms of like just time and like commitment, it's more than enough just to like edit these essays, because it could take like 2 hours to get an essay ready.
Yeah.
Which is its own like thing. But that's basically it. It's just like running the features.
Cool. So, okay. So then now when people are pitching you, okay, you're the features editor at Pop Matters, but you also write for like a zillion other places. So now if someone wants to pitch you for like, for example, an album review for a specific place, how does that work for people that are listening? Because I know some places they want, you got to go through an editor, some places you're allowed to just do what you want. So enlighten people.
Yeah, well, that's interesting. The one thing I kind of always want to stress is that it's never guaranteed.
Yeah.
Like it could be just be like the phrasing. I don't know, but I've gotten some emails. It's like, I'm submitting this for a review. And it's like, I don't have to review it though. And the point I'm at now, it's like, I choose what I write about. So I have to be interested in wanting to write about it positively or negatively. I only have so much time.
Wait, Jordan, one question. You can choose for Kerrang and for Prague too. You're not assigned.
Well, for Kerrang, I pitched. Like, I just did my first album for a review for them last week after pitching features for 18 months and getting nothing. But anyway.
Okay. That's what I was clarifying.
That's a good question, though, because, some places will send, like, the editor will send out a list and say, like, hey, everybody, you know, for freelancers, like, hey, everybody, here's what we have coming up next month. Who wants to take what, you know, and send me a quick, like, pitch. Other places, you have to pitch them.
Yep.
Which is fine. You know, it's just how it works.
So let's go blow a musician wants to get a review with you. How do they pitch you, and which place are they most likely to get it for if they're pitching you direct? I guess is what I'm asking.
Yeah, like directly. Well, one of the sites I write for is called Rebel Noise. Yep. And I can pretty much review whatever I want there. Like they just want content. He's really open. So if even in my spreadsheet, I have just a section there of like albums I want to review that don't go anywhere else, they go there. Mm-hmm. I would say most likely, like metal injection is pretty likely. No, you just pitch Greg and he's pretty open.
Yeah.
Not all the time. Pop matters. I think I have more of a say there because I am an editor, so I kind of have a little bit more weight.
Fair.
The other places are less certain. Like I just reviewed the new Elvis Costello album for Consequence, and I was kind of surprised to get the approval for that. So it's kind of, you know, there are some places where I'm like, well, you know, I'm pretty sure I could do this. Other places, I'm less sure.
So basically it's a crapshoot is what you're telling me.
Yeah, and I think it's weird because it's humbling and it, you know, it always stokes the ego.
Yeah.
But I've had people who, like, as soon as I announced, like, was it last January, I started writing for Loudwire. And immediately people started emailing me, hey, like, here's our band. We want some coverage on Loudwire. I'm like, that's good to know. I have absolutely no say in this. Like, mm-hmm. I do not control what they cover. I can pitch certain things. And I guess that, you know, I am a part of the process. But I think that was the first thing is, well, the first thing I really do want to get out there, and I feel so bad about this, and I'm glad I could say this to you two and anybody else listening. Like, I feel so bad that I cannot reply to everybody. I guess, I don't know if that's part of the process, but
it's part of the I said, it's totally part of the process.
Yeah. And especially like when people are on both sides of it, but you know, I do listen to everything I get sent, but I cannot respond to like everybody. So that's the main thing I do want to always kind of tell publicists and anybody on the other side is like, yeah. I hurt. Cause I'll get some emails of like, just making sure you saw this, or it's like, I saw it and I checked it out. And if I'm interested, I will get back. And I just feel really bad. Like I know I'm ignoring people,
yeah.
But like, what can I, cause in the past when that's happened, and I get it, like it's part of the job, but in the past, yeah. Somebody will say, all right, what about this album? What about this band? And it's like, I want to hear everything that anybody's got, but like, I can't, you know, I can't respond to everybody. So that's the first thing is like, don't take it personally if any writer like doesn't get back to you.
Yeah. So, okay. So now just, so what would be your number one tip if someone was going to be pitching you to a band? So a band, they don't have a PR or anything like that. Yeah. They want to get viewed or what, or they want to get featured or something like that. How should they approach Jordan to be reviewed or interviewed or something like that?
Don't bury the lead. Like, just tell me immediately what the band is, what genre, what album. Show me the link. Because there's been a lot of like emails I'll see where, you know, you got the band picture, you got the description, you got the biography, the press release, and I've written those too. So I get it. But mm-hmm. I'm kind of like scanning, like where's the link for me to click on? Like everything else around this is interesting. But if I don't like the music I'm hearing, I don't care about any other stuff.
True.
And if I do like what I'm hearing, then yeah, I want the context, I want the background, I want what stands out about this artist. But you can, you know, send me all the information about them. But if I click on the SoundCloud link and I'm not interested, I'm not going to, you know, probably not going to write about it. I don't know if that makes me sound arrogant or not, but that's how it works.
So, okay. So then, actually, I think we're good with, or do you have any more follow-ups on pet peeves or on pitching rather quick?
No, I think that's good.
Cool. So let's get on to the next part, which is any advice for anyone looking to get into writing for rock or metal/metal mags and sites?
I guess like harness your voice and like, you know, it reminds me of something Roger Ebert once said when people asked him, you know, to be a good film critic, you have to love movies and know movies. And he said, yeah, but you have to be a good writer first. So like definitely harness your writing ability, your critical thinking ability, and then find your niche and find your voice and kind of try to figure out what sets you apart from other people doing the same thing. And because you want to kind of develop a brand almost, and I don't know to what extent I've done that, you know, again, that makes me think of like the John Lennon quote, half the time I think I'm a genius, half the time I think I'm shit. So I'm always like questioning why people are interested in all, and I'm always so humbled by it. But I like to think I have a clear style at least, and I have kind of like a template that I use.
Yeah.
So that's the main thing I would say is just like harness your voice, you know, learn certain things about writing, and you know, so it's easier for editors to post stuff quicker. And I think it's a big part of pitching too, is like having all of that sorted so that it's just more of what can you cover, not so much worrying about whether you can write or not.
Fair. I think I have one final last question for you. Do you think that most people could turn like just journalism itself into a full-time career? Or do you think it would be mainly, it's for most people, it's going to end up being like a hobby type thing?
I think at this point, unless there's like open positions, I think freelancing kind of hobbying is inevitable. It's certainly a major way to start. I remember seeing once, and it's tricky because like on one hand, you don't want to work for free and you never should sell yourself short. You should know your worth and, you know, all of that everyone always gets told.
Yep.
But the other side of that is you have to establish yourself first. Like I remember when we were talking about in like some email chain about Pace, I only wrote for Pace for a little bit and then they screwed me on money, but that's either here nor there.
Fair.
But some guy, I don't know who he was, but he basically said, you know, I want to get paid this much to do reviews. And I wanted to say, who are you? Like, you don't enter this getting paid $100 or $200 for a feature. Like, you have to build up to it.
Yeah.
So I think it's inevitable to start that way and, you know, just get comfortable with the amount of effort being put into it versus how much you're making and where it gets seen, and always just try to aim higher and never necessarily like settle, but kind of just recognize that it's really hard to make any kind of side living doing this, I think, unless you're really lucky. And it takes a lot of years of rejection, a lot of emails and constantly bothering people and saying like, hey, I'm still here. I want to write for you. You know, what do I have to do?
Yeah. You got to have that persistence there. Yeah. Corey, do you have any final questions for Jordan before we end off?
No, just where can we order the Opeth book? Anything else you want to plug? Like, give us the rundown on where to actually read all of the different writings that you do.
Sure, yeah. So the book comes out in the UK in about a week, I think the 24th of February in the UK, 29th of April in America. And I've seen like all sorts of websites selling it. I don't know legally or not, but the three main ones. The primary one is Burning Shed, which, you know, prog rock fans know Burning Shed. So it's available through there. Amazon, it's available through Barnes & Noble. I've seen the last two books I've seen in Barnes & Noble stores, which is always like weird and surreal to see it on the shelf. So those are the three main places. And then, yeah, like these days you can follow me on Facebook, on Twitter. I have an Instagram, but I don't really use it much. And I would say definitely like Loudwire, I'm doing stuff with all the time, and you know, I'm so fortunate and lucky for that. Metal Injection, I'm always doing some stuff. Pop Matters, What Culture, I'm trying to get more involved in, so the What Culture site I would say too. And yeah, I mean, again, like social media, I constantly post about what I'm up to, whether people want me to or not. I'm constantly like, look what I just did. So that's a good place to see all of it.
Cool. Awesome, Jordan. Well, thank you again for coming on, and with that we are done.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please help spread the word by leaving us a 5-star review on your platform of choice. You can also join the conversation by following us on any social media and suggesting guests or topics you'd like to learn more about. Thanks for listening to C Squared.